Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a Movement by Lara podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Today's episode is a special one. It's with my husband, Mark Hyman, and we discuss a very often not discussed topic, which is grief and how to move in, around, through grief. Grief has been known to have stages, but I think it's a little bit more complex than that. And we discuss all the different layers of it, from his own experiences from a very young age of having to cope with grief and deal with the fallout of some really tragic events that happen in his life. I hope you'll join us because I do think it's important for us to learn how to move as gracefully as possible through a very difficult challenge of experiencing grief. Enjoy this and please share your own thoughts on it or your own stories of moving through grief because I think the more we share, the more we heal. Welcome to today's podcast. This podcast is about a heavier topic, but I think it's a topic that isn't really spoken about as much as it should be because it is a form of movement for sure. And that topic is on grief. And grief is something that we don't necessarily move past, but I think we definitely move through. I have a very special guest, my dear husband, Mark Hyman.
Hello.
So we'll bring some levity to this. More challenging topic. I'll start off just by reading a little bit about what grief is defined as. Grief is a multifaceted response to loss, particularly to the loss of someone or something that has died, to which a bond or affection was formed. Although conventionally focused on the emotional response to loss, it also has a physical, cognitive, behavioral, social, cultural, spiritual, and philosophical dimension. While the terms are often used interchangeably, bereavement refers to the state of loss and grief is the reaction to that loss. So I think we know grief is a natural response to loss. And I've had a recent loss in my life, a huge loss, my father and my husband. Up until then, I had never really lost anyone or had anyone that was very close to me die. I had definitely had very, very dear companion animals who had died and had just broken my heart. But I'd never had a family member or very close friend die. But Mark has. And so I always would look at him as an example of how to handle grief, how to live with grief, how to respond to it. And I think he's a great example of someone who unfortunately had a huge loss early on in his life. His brother died when Mark was 17 and his brother was 19,
16,
and his brother was 18. Okay. And that, of course, shaped you in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I think the first question I would ask you is, can you tell people what it's like to grieve that in that kind of loss when it's such a shocking loss?
Mm-hmm. And then I had my father die. So yes, I had that experience. That was 9 years ago now. So
yeah.
But I'd already had that experience as a child. So the question is, what was it like to...
Yeah, what is the grief like when it happens in that... Yeah, I was going to get to your father too, because that's...
Different kind of grief.
And they're all, you know, they're all grief. And it's, in terms of moving through, or, you don't move past it. I don't think I think it stays with you for sure. And I understand that better now, but, what was it like for you? And what would you say, looking back at that 16-year-old, what would you have to offer and it could be a 16-year-old, it could be a 6-year-old or whoever is experiencing a sudden loss like that, that's unexpected.
Right. So that was, and at that age, there's twofold, because one, it was, there's something about grieving something that's so sudden and unexpected. And then there's the other part that's when you're dealing with it in a part of your life when you're still sort of defining who you are.
Mm-hmm.
As a 16-year-old, in some ways, you know, I tend to look at the positive of things when you don't have a choice of, you don't have control over things, so you try and find the positive. I didn't find any positive there at the time, but looking back, it definitely defined me, made me more compassionate, made me more understanding of others and what the difficulties people go through. It made me more sensitive to that and understanding the grief process. And part of it was what I was dealing with it. And it's very different when it's the third part. So it was, I was young, it was sudden, and the person who died was also young. So you could have someone older who's had a decent life, but it also could be sudden. So I was seeing what was happening with my parents and how to get through that. And usually one great way to deal with it, and I know my parents, or my parents found support for that, is finding in others. There's just finding a support system that there are other people, unfortunately, who are dealing with grief in a way and who've been through that. So it's finding that, because most people just don't know how to relate, and usually are, that's part of the process, is you're grieving for your loss of the person, but you're, as a young person, you're grieving for the loss of your own innocence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just taking the time to not try to rush through that. As a young, when that happened to me, that was right. That was a tough time. I was a junior in high school. It was a week before I took my college, my SAT tests. So you sort of can compartmentalized, and I had to put it off mentally for as much as I could for till the summertime. But then it was a years of processing through, and it still is. I still
mm-hmm.
like I get emotional. 32 years, April 25th. So it's still can be challenging. So yeah, you never get beyond those things. And that to me is, you know, because it was such a tragic death and was early in my life, I have a different relationship to that kind of grief than I do to my father's grief. So I don't know whether I can, every grief, and some of it is you learn as, unfortunately, having gone through several situations, that there's not one way, and that there's no, like, my feelings is not the same as what someone else's mm-hmm. feelings or what you are feeling for your father. And it's just supporting whoever is grieving for whatever, whether it is a person, a sibling, a friend, a father, a favorite pet. Those are all different forms of grief, and they could also affect different people in different ways. So it's just trying to be, what I found is, like, what it's helped me is being able to be helpful for others. It helps me work through my grief, is just being able to be a comfort to others who I know who are going through.
Yeah, I think that, I think you are so right in the sense that there is, I called it it's the club that nobody wants to belong to, but mm-hmm. only once you're a member do you really get it, that you really do need, it is a condolence club. You do need, you do get something from people who have been through something like this. And it doesn't mean that people that have not experienced loss can't give it to the same degree, but I think that you're spot on, that you really need to reach out to people who have also witnessed, done, felt it, all of it.
And it's different with it. Like there is a special, like you, what you're feeling toward your father. Like I can relate to that from losing my father, who is very close, but it's a very different kind of grief than what's losing a sibling. And so even when at the time it was tragic, what I was dealing with losing my brother when I was 16 was very different from what my parents was going through. And not that you put weight on it, but that's a whole different level because that's out of the order of what is expected. And to go through your life when you have these dreams of what it's going to be. And when you're a 16-year-old, I didn't have dreams of what my life with my brother was going to be. But it did have a major impact on me in a different way. But now as a parent, it certainly affects me knowing that. But it's very different from the full life relationship I was able to have with my dad and the sadness and the memories I have for that.
Why do you think it is so difficult for people to talk about grief and to know what to say to people who are grieving? Like, before you answer that, do you remember at 16, like somebody who said a really, really amazing, comforting thing, and also someone who said something that just did not land well, but probably had their meaning was, of course, from the heart. But I think people just get awkward and uncomfortable around grief. Do you remember anybody that really said something like, wow, that really helped, or that just...
You know what? My sense, you don't remember people who said thing. It really, what you remember is the people who weren't there. Like that, it's not people, there's not really that much you could say wrong, except you're sort of just putting it back on how you understand, because you've been through, like, what you remember, the people who are there to listen and who are just there to hear and to hug and to be there to hear you speak and work through it. And especially when it's something tragic, like we have a friend whose husband tragically died, and the kids lost their father tragically suddenly, which is very different from our fathers who died differently. And that was more like what I lost to my brother. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to that point, you're talking about people who tend to shy away because they just don't know what to say, don't know how to be. Mm-hmm. And I find that's the difficulty. The ones that you remember is like, you know, people you almost get, you lose more than you lose the person who died, but you also lose those relationships or people who just can't handle
the sadness,
what you're going through. Yeah. And you don't know how to respond. So I mean, that was so many years ago. So I don't know. You'll have to say whether you remember it specific. I mean, we've had talks about it with your dad, but that was at that point. I think my parents got a lot because there is something for parents who lose a child. There's an organization called Compassionate Friends. And I know they got a lot from hearing other parents. And there was something for Compassionate Siblings, but it was I just being around other people who did. It was just being around people who were listening that meant more than the actual words that people said. Right. What about you? Did you...
I don't think so much for me, because again, I think it's different. My dad was older. I mean, he would have been 80 next month. He'd had a full life, so to speak. I mean, he wasn't shortchanged, you know, like an earlier death would have been. But I do think I've had people that have written me and said, oh, I have a friend or someone I know at work and they also lost a parent. I'm not very close with them. I'm not really sure if I should say anything or I should bring them something. And I said, do something. Like it could be just a note. And I think just, I got so many emails and texts and messages from people. And those are just so meaningful. It doesn't have to be a huge gesture by any means, but it's just this, it's an acknowledgement. Like, I see that you're hurt and I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You don't like, I think the big thing, and I've done this in the past, and I've used you as an example of how you helped me when we met and you were telling me the story of your brother. And, you know, at that point he'd been dead maybe just 10 years.
When we met, he'd died in 1987. So when we met, it would have been
like a little over 10 years. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember I was saying something, I don't even remember what it was, but you kind of interrupted me and you said very nicely, you were just like, you don't have to make it better. You know, just listen. And I was like, oh crap. You know, that's just like an instinct to, you see somebody hurting and you just want to kind of like you find a way of making it better and maybe commiserate like, oh yeah, well, I also have had this. And it's like, no, just listen. And I think that was such a beautiful lesson that you taught me. It's like, it's okay to be uncomfortable with somebody's grief, and you don't have to try and take it away, because you can't, you know, right. Like you can't take away somebody's grief. So the best thing to do is just actually be close and be available and you know, like a hug or any kind of gesture is really important. And I think the more we talk about grief and how it is this, you know, it is something that is you move through, I think, for your life. Like yeah. You still tear up, and because there's a lot of loss still there. It doesn't go away. And I think that's the other thing I wanted to talk about is I think that there's so many books written on grief, and they talk about stages of grief. And then there's people who are like, actually, there aren't any stages of grief. They're like, you move through different periods of grief, but grief doesn't totally leave you. It just, you become more comfortable with wearing it. Mm-hmm. And I would say, what are your thoughts about that in terms of?
I think I definitely had parts of there's anger. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think just because you go through a stage doesn't mean it never comes back. Sometimes I go back to an anger and sadness, and also different people feel like I don't know how I would have been. I'm definitely more emotional and more in touch with my emotions now, but there's certainly people who are not. So what I need mm-hmm. is not necessarily what someone else needs. I think the one thing that no one really needs is to hear, like when I think people feel like they need to sort of say, sometimes people would, the only wrong thing is when people make it about themselves.
Yeah.
Like which for is anybody.
What you do to make it more right. comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like it's a way of, you think it's a way of kind of commiserating, but it is. Yeah. It's kind of selfish in a way.
Right. So it's not about, it's just about like they don't want to, people don't want to hear about your stuff at that point. They're sort of into what they're doing. And so, you know, some people might need a hug, and some people just might need you just sort of sitting next to them. And it's, I guess the key, the things I would say, the definite do's are just being there, and what that is for different people and what that person needs is just, it's going to be different for the different people. And the one thing not to do is not to take it over and make it about you. So mm-hmm. other than that, it's so personal about what, and then it's just being aware. Like you could sort of sense that there's someone need, that seem like the person really needs a hug and to let it out, or just needs to be, to have someone just sitting there and letting them talk, or maybe not, or sometimes not wanting to talk about it, not wanting to be about that. It's just being open to the communication, the nonverbal communication that's going on.
Did you ever feel at all uncomfortable if some, like anybody was pitying you, you know, like, I'm sure that people who have that loss of that tragic loss, there is this sense that you don't want people to, you don't want to feel pity, you know? That's an uncomfortable feeling too.
I don't remember. Like, again, this is like 32 years ago. And I think when it was different, like if people were pitying me, you know, I was so all about me at that point and working through this, and it was a whirlwind, you know, we weren't sleeping. It was a rough year. And then I needed to there was just so many dynamics I was dealing with then becoming the only child in the house and being sort of feeling a little smothered. And so I just remember being a lot more aware of the importance of life. And I think that's the one thing you get from any kind of death, whether at any age, you see your father die, you see a sibling, a friend die. It's like, wow, this is not permanent.
Yeah.
There's, mm-hmm. it's not like, you know, so it means like, don't go to bed and that's what one thing that sort of stays with me, because like, you don't know, you get that call and it can happen anytime. So don't go to bed with a fight, you know, sort of don't wait till the morning to figure those things out or to say what you want to say. So it's just like be in the moment. And some of that I learned from my brother, because he sort of lived his 18 years like that was all he was going to have. So, but I think that's the one thing that you learn at any stage is just being, trying to be more in the moment.
Right. And I always say that the silver lining, if there could be any silver lining about your brother's death, is that you are I'm sure you were an amazing human to begin with.
I was incredible.
Always, right? You just came out like
my mom says. Yes, I've never done anything wrong.
You never did anything wrong. Of course, you never ran around a restaurant at 2 years old screaming like artists did.
Right.
You are truly the most passionately I think a lot, like so in you, you walk your talk so 100%. Like when you say family is first, it is first. It is not like that's what you want it to be. And I really love that about you.
I just want to say there's always a silver lining. There's always a silver lining. So, I mean, you might not see it at that moment, but there's a reason, you know, and I don't necessarily believe like, oh, that's God's purpose for, I'm not really into that, but there's a reason where like something happens and you could get something from that, the crap
there
that
might not
happens.
Be a reason for it that happened.
That happened.
No,
because but we don't there's wanna... a reason. There's something to get from anything. And this is one of the great things when I was an actor for all those years. One of the wonderful things as an actor is like, no matter how bad something is, you're going to be able to use it. it's like I'll use that at some point. But you could use that really with anything in life. That it's going to teach you something. You can learn from it.
Yeah, because I do think it's important to say we're not saying. I think that's the worst thing to say to somebody. That everything is happens for a reason.
No, that's not
what you're saying.
I'm not saying it's for a reason, but there's growth that there is a silver lining in the worst of the worst, mm-hmm. and whether it's going to make you able to help others heal or be able to listen or be more compassionate or create a compassionate world, or there's something that
surviving
you're going to get.
Surviving and resiliency. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like if you can bounce off of the bottom.
And it takes a while to sort of own. You might like understand that superficially as soon as something bad happens, but it takes a while. But ultimately, I think most people know, and you hear about these people who've had these awful accidents or life-changing and like losing their legs and losing limbs. And they say, I wouldn't change it. Like what they learn from it and how you grow from it. And that could be no matter how bad. And obviously I would change these things about someone dying, but it happened and there's nothing I could do about it except, you know, it's becomes a complete waste if I can't learn from it and grow from it.
It's a beautiful thing to say. Exactly. It would be a complete waste to not. I love that. So I remember you said that you went and saw a psychic because you really... Mm-hmm. I think that, especially again, with the tragic death, I think there is, I mean, I actually want to do this with my dad too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have this like, holy shit, we're never going to see or talk to this person again. Right. And it's like, whoa, that's hard to swallow. Mm-hmm. And so what compelled you to go to this psychic and what did you learn? Did you feel like you had a connection with David?
Yes. Yeah, so and it wasn't like just a street.
I know that.
It makes it seem like, I'm going to go. These were like,
well, medium. There's a medium.
And he had been, you know, at least that time, I don't know if he's around. He's written many books.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, I don't know. Should I say? His name is George Anderson.
He was public, right?
He has lots of books out. And so my sense with that, and you called and you didn't give any information. You set up an appointment and I have an audio tape of it and you don't give him any information. You go and we had like our meeting and it was a very special thing. It was like a birthday because it was very expensive to do and it was hard to get an appointment with him. But so my takeaway from that is that there are elements of it. I remember coming away being like, wow, there are things that he was able to connect me with. There's some things that felt like he was fishing for things, like, or he was filling, like there is a connection. I left feeling like, okay, there is something out there and there are people, there's no reason to think that there can't be people who have, I mean, there are people, I know this is going to be shocking to you, but there are people that who are like a lot more intelligent than I am, right? Like crazy, but you know, so are at a different level, even that we can see, right? So that we can tell there are different levels that we're just understanding things that I can't even fathom. But you could know they can't fathom. So why can't there be people who are understanding things on a completely level that we can't fathom on a completely different level, right?
So I believe that.
I firmly believe there are people that have some kind of connection to it. And like he was telling me things about him without knowing anything about him, about his spirit and the type of a person, and that was a sibling. Like there's things that he got that I was like, wow. And there were other things that I was like, well, it feels like he's fishing for trying to fill like the gaps because it's an hour and that he's not getting some of this stuff. But some of the things and his personality types and the little things that he was saying about him that were so David and so not other people, mm-hmm. that were like so clearly my brother. It just gave me a sense of hope that there is a contact, and that's sort of just a wonderful feeling to be able to think, well, whatever's there, that there's going to be a connection. And I know from my father that made when he was dying was easier. It's like, okay, I'm going to lose all these people who I love so much, who I've had my life with, but there's his family waiting for him on the other side, and he'll be able to reconnect with his son. Mm-hmm. And I've also had connections in hard times where I just like felt this presence there for me years ago when I was going through some difficult times. So I believe that there is something there, and that's all it gave me was this sense that there is, not that I don't want to be here, but at some point when the time comes, that there is something. I don't know what it is, but mm-hmm. there is some connection, and I might be able to have even the hope that maybe there's someday that I'll be able to have some kind of connection with
him again.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful way
to at least think. And who knows? You can't prove one way or the other. So you might as well believe in whatever is going to bring you some solace.
That's what I loved about my dad, because, and you know how much we loved him. He would, like something like that, he wouldn't poo-poo it. He would just say, well, who is to say? Like, right. Who's to say that that's not possible? And I think, boy, that could be really comforting if you went to a medium and that person said, hey, you know, your brother is telling you good job or right. whatever, you know, that would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he got his name. He got like, and this, they don't know anything about you. And now, and this was before internet. I mean, you could do so many more searches on like, so this was in the 80s. This was 1988. So there was not really, now it would be that much more difficult to actually believe.
You'd be like,
okay, it'd be so easy to get some background or find mm-hmm. stuff on the internet about people. This was before all that. We didn't even have cell phones, let alone computers to find. And the information he was able to piece together, some of it, was mind-blowing. And then I would go back and listen. I was like, okay, well, this I could sort of understand, but this other piece, like how the heck did he mm-hmm. have that kind of specific, that was so specifically David and no one else that was like him. So,
yeah. Anyway. I think the other thing that as we're talking, we're both like tearing up. I think mm-hmm. it's really important, I would say to people, is that don't be afraid to show emotion. I mean, I've learned that a lot from you. Actually, Mark is much more of a crybaby originally than I was. I was kind of a crybaby during like really moving movies and stuff like that. But I kind of was, I think, tougher and didn't want to show maybe that vulnerability. And being with you for 20 years has really, just now I'm just like a big mush pot. But I think in with grief, and when you see someone grieving and you're with somebody grieving, that again, holding that space for that to happen is really important. So one thing I would say, if anybody is grieving, let it all out, like get on the floor, cry, mm-hmm. Scream, whatever.
Yeah. That's, I mean, part of it is like, don't block those, I mean, there's a time and place. You're not going to be like in the, you know, the shopping center.
Thank you, honey. And find somebody who's funny
in the middle of there's a time and place.
You're sobbing general, will make you laugh.
So,
no, that's true. But the point is like, be okay because otherwise you are just shoving all that crap down.
And it's still going to be there.
It hurts. So you got to go. I think one thing is having now, like it almost being, I guess, 3 months that since mm-hmm. my dad died, going through, it's still the acute phase, but it's much less raw. And I think that a lot of that is that I allowed myself to really, really drop into the mm-hmm. the period of bereavement. And that will, I think that's probably it. The grief will remain, but the period of bereavement of saying, you know, being okay with the loss and moving through that loss, that's something you can move through. I think grief will stay.
And express it. I remember you've been so eloquent in your writing. And I think that's, mm-hmm. you know, yes, you're sharing it with others, but I think that's obviously more for you mm-hmm. than others. My dad was, I wrote music and songs and some poetry. My dad wrote tons of poetry about my brother. Mm-hmm. That was just for him, just to be able to get that out, to be able to get those thoughts that are going through your head, that voice that's going out in some form. And we all have different ways, but it's just being able to express in whatever's true to you, so that you don't bottle it up, because it's going to come out in some forms, and it's a much healthier to let it out
And I would say some cultures are really good at that, and some are not. And I know, like, so for instance, speaking of my dad, he grew up and his brother died when he was very young. My dad was only 2 and a half, and his 7-year-old brother was drowned. And that was tragic. And, you know, part of it was maybe the time, but it was also, this was in the South, and you just didn't want to talk about things that were hard. And so they did the opposite. They didn't talk about it at all. And that has its own, you know, hurt to it, because it is such a tragedy to have any kind of loss, but that's a real loss, you know, a real tragic loss. But I think no one wants to talk about a child dying either. So I think, but by not talking about it, by not processing it, by not doing all the kind of stuff that needs to be done, they had a lot of wounds there. And so, again, we're not psychologists here, but just from our own experience, and I think that it's really important to express the grief and be totally fine with expressing it and saying, you know, I'm sad today and I just need to... I need a, you know, a hug, or I need to be by myself, or I need to take a walk in the woods, but be okay with all of those feelings. And then I think the other thing is, if you are with someone, or you know, and this could be anybody that's lost an animal, a furry animal, a member of your family, is incredibly heart-wrenching. And so I think that sometimes we feel like we have to kind of underplay that, because it's like, oh, it's just a dog or a cat, but these are animals that are, you know, family members that are in our lives in a way that almost no other family member is. And so I think that be there for those people as well, because loss is loss and grief is grief, and just being a good person, a good friend, a good human, we really should be there for each other. Right. And not run away from grief because it's uncomfortable, because it's going to hit us all in different time periods.
Right. And it could be, I mean, some people with, as far as animals, I mean, some people, there are people who have a really dramatic grief to that. And there are others, like when we've had some of our close animals, it's been hard, but it's been short lived for me, for
Although
our animals,
Newt,
but it's
yeah,
been, right.
Yeah.
You know, Newt, but it's
was
still
like months.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it can be, depending on the animal, depending on the person. It's, again, just being open, just being aware that someone might be not necessarily going to have a deep grief for a long period, but could, and it's just being open and checking in.
Yeah, checking
I think that
in.
That's
Absolutely.
What I think we've all, fortunately, we all are going to be, we're going to be less the person grieving less time than we are going to be around people that we know who are. So it's like, it's more that it's like, just be present, be aware, and trying to give space when you need it. It's like what I try to do with you. Sometimes it just seems like, okay, you need to space to sort of just do your thing, and you're going to go through your phases, and sometimes you need to talk, and sometimes there might be anger, and sometimes there just might be sadness, and, you know, it's all part of it.
Yeah. It's all part of it. And there's no right or wrong.
Right.
So I think, again, getting back to moving, it's just, move through it. Don't just sit in it. You know, it's okay to feel it, but don't feel like it's just going to take over your life, or that you have to ignore it or stuff it down. Like, just move with it and move through it and get help. Get help if you need it, and be that person to offer solace as well. Mm-hmm. Any other last words for grief?
For grief, just love every day. Because you don't know when you're not going to be able to express it anymore. So just share your love and forgive. Love and forgive.
I love that. Oh, I think that's a good place to end on. I would just say also that pain is going to happen, and pain is worth it if there was love. Mm-hmm. So yeah, love big. I love you.
I love you too, Sweetie.
All right. Love to all of you guys, especially if you are grieving. We're here for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.